You're listening to Pop Culture Fanatics, a podcast for the crazy fan in you. What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Pop Culture Fanatics, the only podcast for the fanatic inside of you. I'm your host with the most, Mr. Val Cisco, and of course, with me as always, one of my best friends in the whole entire world, Mr. Jake. How you doing, sir?
Hey, we're back! Oh my god, man, it's been a minute since we've come together like this. I mean, man, it feels good.
It does, right? Sometimes, you know, after a long hiatus, especially when you're doing some soul searching and you're trying to just figure out your place in this world, coming back to the podcast scene just feels so good, especially when you have a good subject and good company around you. Guys, if you don't know, if you haven't read the title of this, this episode is specifically on Jurassic Park. It's a retrospective of the first three films, the original trilogy, because in this crazy country of ours, we have Jurassic World Dominion debuting, I want to say tonight and tomorrow as well, too, depending on your time zone. And I want to get your barometer on it. Are you excited for Dominion, or has that gravy train kind of passed in your eyes?
Oh, I almost have no interest in seeing it.
Wow.
When I do, it's going to be purely for shits and giggles. Like, I'm being completely honest.
It's like our Hellboy experience.
It's exactly like our Hellboy experience. I know it's going to be an absolute. It's like me going back in time and willingly buying a ticket for the Titanic. I know it's going to happen, but I'm going to do it anyway because I'm going to have a good time.
You know, if they re-released Titanic in the theaters, I would go see it just for shits and giggles for all the wrong reasons. Just scream at Rose. There was room on that door. You bitch. You let him die.
Redeveloped by Naughty Dog from the ground up.
Billy Zane playing every role. I have a daughter. Fucking love Billy Zane. Wrong movie. We're going to be talking about the good stuff, though. But you know what? Just to accent what you're saying on the craze for Jurassic World right now, you know, it's all over television, all the ad spots, a Carl's Jr. freaking burger commercial and all that stuff. My take on it so far, even though we're not really talking about this week, we'll get into it maybe later on in a month with the second trilogy. But, I mean, I'm always down for some JP. Always loving some Jurassic Park, Jurassic World. Loving seeing the old cast of characters come back in their tender age. you know, Jeff Goldblum just not giving a damn whatsoever. Pay me, I'll do whatever. But I will say, though, as much as the movie itself seems a little tantalizing just because of the cast, I do agree with you that I'm not as overly excited as I wanted to be, because at this point in time, we'll talk about it as well too, as we'll get into the second movie as well. We already kind of seen this already. We've seen dinosaurs loose out in the open, and then we definitely seen dinosaurs in the second part of that movie, or at least the third act, in the United States as well too. So you're not really breaking the fourth wall or any wall whatsoever. You're kind of just rehashing some things. If anything, you're a little bit younger than me, Jake, but I'm not sure if you ever heard of the franchise called Dino Riders.
I cannot recall. Oh, wait. I think I'm getting like 90s flashbacks. Hold on.
For those of the audience, while Jake is Googling this, you'll probably hear a giggle. Dino Riders was a cartoon and action figure series based on prehistoric dinosaurs and man colliding together with futuristic technology. Think of G.I. Joe with dinosaurs.
Yeah!
That's all I wanted, Jake. I wanted laser beams on dinosaurs' heads and then just being weaponized dinosaurs. Yes, that's all I wanted. And I feel like we had the perfect end for this. Like, you couldn't do anything else. Might as well strap an AK on one of them and just go to town on a Stegosaurus. But I digress. We're not getting that. We're definitely getting more of a family-friendly movie, and kudos for that. But let's get into it, man. Let's get into the muck of things. Let's get into why we kind of love this movie, because honestly, this is my favorite movie of all time. I think I've seen the original Jurassic Park, oh, so many times I can't even try to count. From the score to the direction to the movie to the acting to the actors in this. We'll get into the actors as well too. Such a who's who in this movie. To the set designs, to the realism with the animatronics, to even the CGI and how groundbreaking it was and how it still holds up today. I absolutely love this movie. What about your thoughts on the original, the first Jurassic Park?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know what's funny, and while I feel the way I do about especially this current movie, though, it is bringing up a lot of nostalgia as far as the advertising goes, because one thing I can distinctly remember about the original OG, you know, first Jurassic Park movie was just the advertisement that was everywhere. You know, everything had a dinosaur plastered on it. Everything had that classic Jurassic Park logo on it. There was candy. There was everything that you can think of that was advertising this movie. And when I'm seeing all this new advertisement now, I mean, you have the shit with Carl's Jr. You have, what was it? It was shaving cream. I know what they were doing with that shaving cream. But, you know, and I was even thinking, I was like, did they do this with the original? I can't remember. But that's just how, like, to me, it's just bringing up that nostalgia there.
Yeah. Definitely nostalgia vibes when it comes to this movie. For both movies right there and how they parallel. I mean, essentially, Dominion will be the final film when it comes to this franchise for Jurassic Park. So let's get into the thick of things when it comes to the beginning. 1993, science fiction horror movie directed by Steven Spielberg, produced by Kathleen Kennedy, who, let me just tell people, she has a lot of heat in the world because she essentially is like the Kevin Feige of the Star Wars universe. So a lot of the backlash of what goes on in Star Wars, whether it's a yay or nay, whether you're a Rey supporter or Finn supporter, whether you like the Mandalorian or not, that kind of is riding on her on her shoulders right now. She is the one driving that agenda right now in Star Wars. So maybe one day we'll get into that. But Kathleen Kennedy as a producer to this, of course, the book itself coming out in 1990, which is based on written by Michael Crichton, and the Who's Who's cast. Let's just talk about this cast from the 90s, man. You have Sam Neill, which I love Sam Neill. I know he's not in a lot of movies. You know, he's brought a lot of one-offs from the 90s. He's in this great movie called Daybreakers with Ethan Hawke as well, too, which I love him as a villain. I always thought he would make a great villain in the movie as well, too. Laura Dern, who's an absolute pleasure. Jeff Goldblum, who, self-explanatory. You can't say anything about Jeff Goldblum. And if you speak bad about him, how dare you? Samuel L. Jackson, Wayne Knight, Newman himself in this movie. And you know what? Every single one of these characters is prevalent. They have... They have a role. They're not just background fodder. They mean something to this movie. Or am I reaching too much there?
No. Everybody, what's really cool about this cast is, you know, whether they're well known or not, especially at this time, I mean, every character has their place where it's just prevalent, and they're each one is like pretty much memorable. And the way that it's not only written and scripted and directed, but the way that they were able to portray each character, it just fit. And I think that's why this movie holds up to this day. It's because like nothing feels out of place, especially when it comes to the characters. You know, obviously going down the line, you know, it gets, but the handful of characters that each played their part here, it was just like, even the ones that didn't survive, right, you know them, you remember them, they had their place, they had their their unique characteristic about them, you know, their personality that they brought into the film that just made it even more exciting and made it very immersive.
Even with the beginning of that movie and how it sets the tone, and it's very ominous at first as well too, with the music, with the setting, especially on Isla Nublar, and you see just dinosaurs kind of in a freight getting released into its little zone, and you get to meet one of the first main characters, which is Robert Muldoon, and he's the guy that he's very quotable. The girl, shoot her! I mean, you cannot tell me that is like burned in everyone's freaking mind right there.
Bro, just straight up zoomed onto the mouth. Shoot her!
As the hand slowly releases from his grip. That dude died. That dude died in such a bad way, too.
That dude was a reason for more deaths to come.
You should have known right at that moment, right there. You know what? This is not going to work. Casualties at all. Yeah, Hammond.
Go back to your fleas.
But that aside, right there, just the culture of this movie is just fantastic. You know, very science fiction field, and we're not really going to talk about the book because it kind of does take a turn from what the book does give, but the movie itself, Steven Spielberg coming with a vision, coming into this movie and saying, you know, he was always captivated by the original King Kong movie, and then Godzilla, and even before that with the original Lost World. And seeing these movies and seeing the stop motion animation and seeing how that amazed people at his age and saying, you know what, I can do better. And to Spielberg's credit, he already did so many memorable movies at that time. You're looking at E.T., Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Jaws. You know, if you want a monster movie, he already did it. But he wanted something that would capture the imaginations of kids and adults alike. And I think this was the perfect amalgamation of that, because definitely when you look at this movie, you definitely get a Godzilla feel, you get a King Kong feel, especially when you first see those two doors that say Jurassic Park, and of course Ian Malcolm makes a line, what do you got in there, King Kong? Like, right there, like, it's just such, it's so inspired by the movies in the past. It's a love letter to King Kong, a love letter Godzilla, in the best way.
I couldn't agree more. And when you really think about it too, it's like the way that this movie was shot, it was made for theaters. Mm-hmm. Like, it was so beautifully choreographed, beautifully directed, beautifully shot. It you know, the sounds, the and just the way that each event takes place. I mean, you know, the moment where, you know, the electricity goes out and that's where we first get, you know, our T-Rex encounter. That probably got to be one of the greatest film scenes in movie theater history, because it's like, I can just remember being back in the theater and just like hearing the rain in that beautiful THC surround sound, you know?
I will say this though, this movie, it has so much dark humor in it. And I think this is why it separates itself from the rest of the movies, the sequels that come after it, because it's not trying to be funny. And I feel like even with The Lost World and Part 3 as well, too, there are intentional jokes to make you laugh, you know, especially with Vince Vaughn. This is not even Vince Vaughn being funny at that time. This was serious psycho Vince Vaughn, you know, serious actor Vince Vaughn. And he's over here making whimsical jokes. Part 3, we'll talk about that as well too, but this movie, the first one, there's just so many parts that are just dark but humorous, especially when you first meet Alan Grant for the first time, played by Sam Neill, and you know, he's getting disrespected by this kid talking about, you know, these raptors are turkeys and they're not even scary, and my man just, he basically plays this kid so hard, taking out a freaking giant raptor claw and basically showing him how this dinosaur would kill you. Just like, it'll slash you in the abdomen, it'll wait for your intestines to come out, it'll eat you alive. At the end of the day, don't disrespect these kids. I love that part.
That's what I love, because like, it, unless you really think back, you know, to how it was written, like that was like how it was setting up how he just felt about kids in general, because when you remember, he didn't want kids, he never wanted kids, and even though the kids were like gravitating towards him, you know, when they got to Jurassic Park, like he wanted nothing to do with them, right? And so that's what makes that part even better. It's because it really set that up, but you really had no idea until you look back at it. It's like, oh, yeah, he was like, he had no second thoughts about just freaking that kid out because he's like, I don't like your kind anyway.
And of course, you have like the positive person, which is Laura Dern's character, Ellie Sattler, just like, relax, dude, it's okay. I want to have a kid with you one day, but you're kind of crazy. I like that balance that they give each other. They play well with each other throughout the whole movie. You definitely see the love, the admiration for each other as colleagues and as people that are dating as well too. I like the fact that, you know, they're not like all over the place, like PDA all over the place. You know, they're respectful.
Right.
They're adults, basically. Like, we have jobs. Right. We're here to do things, but we carry by each other. I love that. And to Samuel's credit as well, too, I don't think he was at it at that time, but, you know, Sam Neill, gay man, like, very proud gay man as well, too, had to hide that at that time to get that role as well, just to be, you know, that macho, I'm going to wear the hat, I'm going to put the glasses on, I'm going to strap my belt with my seatbelts on the helicopter, I'm a manly man. And I'm like, huh, the dichotomy there of a guy that, like, really was kind of hiding himself at that time, trying to be a macho person. I just find that very, very interesting for the 90s at that time.
Wait, step back, hold on, what?
Yo, you didn't know that Samuel was gay?
Huh?
Well, look at this, sir. I just edumacated you.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Well, then.
We had two gay characters then in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because we also had, what's his name?
Which one?
B.D. Wong.
B.D. Wong as well, too. B.D. Wong, who out of nowhere has become the villain for the Jurassic World franchise and the video games, which I absolutely love. I don't think B.D. Wong gets enough respect from... I mean, he plays such a minute role in Jurassic Park 1, but in the new sequels, especially in Jurassic World and Jurassic Dominion, he definitely plays a pivotal role in those movies, but, you know, such a minute part, but still, with him, you get the science of it all. He explains exactly why and what's happening here with Engine, with genetics, and how they're only making female dinosaurs so they don't have to reproduce. You know, a lot of stuff comes from BD1 as well, too. So, look at that. Two gay characters right there in the midst of Jurassic Park. It's not a macho movie, people. You know, there's a lot of people in this movie. you know what? And we'll just stick on that right here, because the most flamboyant character of this movie, and hell, the most flamboyant character in any movie he's in, Jeff Goldblum, Ian Malcolm. You know, this man, I don't think I've ever seen a bad Ian Malcolm movie, and even in the bad ones that he's been in, like that Resident Evil, what was it, Requiem? Not Resident Evil, Independence Day, the sequel that they did.
Oh, yeah. I forgot all about
he's
that.
He's in there, too, just hamming it in, like, yep, this is happening. But even he's just so charismatic in the smallest ways. He, you know, the line, spare no expense, is fucking in this movie from start to finish. But I feel like every word that Jeff Goldblum spews out of his mouth spares no expense. There's always a reason, a rhyme. He pulls you in because he talks so low and slow, but at the same time, it's very chaotic as well, too. So you're trying to figure this character out, but you're captivated of what he's saying.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, that's what I love from, you know, the moment that, John Hammond and him meet. It's like they're just like at odds at each other. Mm-hmm. You know, John Hammond's trying to show, like, look what I've created. And what's funny is that he, Jeff Goldblum characters, like, appreciates it. He's like, wow, like, you really did do this. But, and like, he's trying to be the brakes of this the entire time. He's like, appreciating, yes, what's there, but he's like, at the same time, I don't think you really have any clue of, like, what you really created. You
cause
know what
and
I
effect.
Mean? Yes, exactly. He's, and that's what I love, because, like, they have just back and forth, and even that one line where he's like, I hate that man. You know, it's a, again, it's all part of that great acting and that great writing that just continues to make this a great movie.
Yeah, man. I mean, you can talk about a lot of characters, even, and we'll get off the characters in a second too, but even we take the main characters aside, you know, you're looking at Wayne Knight with Dennis Nedry or Nedry. I love his character. You know, he is the cause of everything that happens in this movie. He is the one that sets all these plans in motion, the chaos in motion. Because of him, this is why we probably have the situation we're in that movie. But I get it. He's a person that busted his ass, is doing things that probably he shouldn't be doing legally in this island, and he's not getting paid for it. He's like, you know, man, you know, I can use a couple of shekels, keep my mouth shut. And my man John Hammond, ultra trillionaire, spare no expense, is like, nah, $7.50 minimum wage for you, Wayne.
You know what's funny? It wasn't till a recent rewatch of this movie that I realized, like, he really, and it's so methodical at where that line is placed. Spare no expense, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't till just recently that I realized, like, wow, he's really trying to sell this to not only to, you know, Alan Grant and Ellie Sattler, but to the lawyer as well, yes. Right? Because the lawyer has to convince people, the shareholders, that one, this is going to be safe, and two, like, this is going to bring us a shit ton of money, right? And that's that, like, again, it's not just thrown out there. Like, it's very intricately placed at when he says that, especially when he's doing the tour. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's capitalism at its best. It's basically selling Disney World to a live Disney World, basically. And, you know, trying to, you know, show, accentuate the positives, hide the negatives. That's all what John Hammond's about in this. And of course, you know, the late great Richard Attenborough, you know, did pass away, but he's a key pivotal person as well too, because when you first meet this character, yeah, he's a little disrespectful. He's popping champagne where it doesn't belong. He's meddling in the kitchen, you know, he's messing
just
up the fucking
up their new finding. He's like, you just land the helicopter right here, they'll be fine, right?
Fuck your clothes, we know they're drying, they're spinning around now, the helicopter guys get the fuck out of here. But such an endearing character, because although he's a little bit of a schmuck, at the same time, you can't help but fall for him. And it's his presence. It's the white clothes, it's the hat, it's the glasses, the beard. It's like watching Santa Claus, which he did play Santa Claus too at one point. It's watching this character, basically your grandfather, saying, yeah, things are a little crazy, but everything's going to be okay. And there's something about him that just feels very warm. And you can tell why these characters give so much trust to this character as well too. Why they're like, you know what, you might be a little crazy, but we're going to go for the ride. And I love the way he sells it. I love the fact that he's very mysterious. I love the trip going there. And then I recently saw it the other day, because I revisit this movie at least once a month, even if it's just for parts. And I still think in 2022, the part where we see Alan Grant seeing the Bronze Swords for the first time, and I'm almost like, it's such a fucking great scene. And yeah, does the CGI 100%? Hold up in 2022 standards? Maybe not, but it's still groundbreaking and beautiful. And it's the acting, the reaction of Alan Grant, the reaction of Ellie Sattler when he just turns her head, and just seeing Jeff Goldblum surprised but not surprised at the same time. Like, yeah, this is crazy.
Purposely
but
holding back, right?
Yes, like it's just a beautiful moment. It's euphoric because these guys who dig up dinosaur bones for a living get to see the fruits of their labor in a way, living, breathing, and it's like, what do you do? What do you do at that point?
Absolutely. I love that you brought that up, because honestly, again, that is also one of my favorite scenes, and I've always thought it was weird that, like, I would just keep rewinding it, just because I'm like, I love watching the reaction to that, because it's so natural. Like, it really is. Like, who else wouldn't have that same reaction? Like, he struggles to take off his glasses because he's literally looking at something that they could only picture with their imagination, right? They find these bones, and then they try to draw picture, you know, try to imagine, like, what did this dinosaur really look like? You know, having those debates, like, this one had feathers, this one didn't have feathers, you know what I mean? And so being able to actually see that with your eyes the first time, and then, like, Laura Dern is just like, you know, again, you're right. The acting of that couldn't have been more perfect, because it was just so natural. You wouldn't think that they were looking at, again, at, but how old was I, like four? I didn't think that they were looking at a CGI animatronic at that time. I thought they were looking at a full fucking living dinosaur. Yeah, it's, and going back to John Hammond, like the other part that I really love, and which kind of sells you on his charismatic personality, is the conversation that he's having with Laura Dern, you know, when they're eating all the ice cream, that, you know, when he's telling that life story, I mean, you kind of feel bad for him because, you know, he has these aspirations, he had these dreams, and, you know, kind of getting, like, that was probably the most vulnerable that he had been that entire movie. And it was just so beautifully shot. And yeah.
That's, I mean, you gotta think of it too. Like, you accept that pretty well, because in a perfect world, what if nothing failed in that visit? You know, in a perfect world, it's just one bad day that fucked everything up. And that speaks volumes as well, too, because one bad day could fuck anything up. You look at Jurassic World and his vision actually coming to life, an actual Jurassic Park, living, breathing exhibits, sights, rides, and all that stuff. His vision actually came true, but still, one bad day causes all that havoc. So, but even imagine, just take that, those issues aside, imagine what the world would have been like, hell, if John Hammond's vision came true at that moment in time. It's remarkable to think that just one issue of a computer fucks everything up, but that's what I love about it, is because a small thing of chaos just destroys everything.
Which is what Jeff Goldblum said at the very beginning of the movie, you know, but it wasn't a computer freak. It was sabotage. Like,
it was sabotage. It was sabotage.
You didn't say the magic word. You know?
Samuel
Jackson.
All
you had to do was pay the man. And you know what? Like, that concept is so overlooked because, again, like, it takes you back to the very beginning of the movie, mm-hmm. right? It, like, that gives you the preconceived notion that this is just going to be fucked from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Like, you automatically gave this absolutely no chance to success because dude got smashed, you know, he got dragged by a velociraptor that I don't know how many times they shot that thing and how it didn't go down. I have no fucking clue, right? but it's, yeah, like, from that beginning, you just get the preconceived notion that this is just not going to work. This is not going to be successful. And again, it had worked. It would have worked, maybe, because, again, then you have the other human error, which using the frog DNA, which eventually kind of took its own course. But again, just a smart, beautifully moving. I mean, does it have its flaws, especially, you know, with its science? Absolutely. It's still Hollywood at the end of the day, but yeah, you can't deny just the adventure. And I think that's one thing that we haven't really talked about much is the adventure throughout the rest of the movie, right? Once all hell breaks loose, right? And then you have Alan with the two kids trying to keep them safe when he doesn't like kids, but, you know, he has to be that protective figure through this bout. But at the same time, he's taking those moments to make sure that they not only feel safe, but, you know, he's distracting them. You know, he's teaching them. He's giving them just like, you know, dinosaur trivia. Yes, exactly, right? And then even like the moment with the fucking fence, and which is like probably one of the most comical.
Tim! Come on, Tim!
Bro, the way he flew was just the greatest fucking
thing. Didn't even get a three. He was like, one, two, I'm dead.
How he survived that, I have no.
It's still a great scene.
His hair is like standing up.
He's like, if I could do this, I could just survive anything. Like, I'm good. I went through a car, off a cliff. Like,
right.
My life is complete. Like, nothing can distract me anymore.
I don't have to do anything. It's gonna be one hell of a settlement.
And my grandpa's rich too. Like, I'm not dealing with shit.
it's just a really fun fucking movie, and I think we're fortunate enough to get that and to be able to see it as kids. I mean, pretty sure as adults, you know, I'm sure the adults at that time enjoyed it too. But having that experience as a kid makes it so much more better because you have a wider imagination, you know what I mean? You think that the possibilities are endless. So you're just like beyond captivated at watching something like this.
And I love this movie from start to finish because not just the craziness with the actors and the believability that you get from their reactions, but the music itself, you know, John Williams, a legend when it comes to music in film, and just the music that he created for this film, it's just it takes a life of its own, especially in the right places, from the subtle nuances to the dangerous parts of the movie as well. To you feel like the music drives the movie, and I love that. I love when a good movie has great music behind it to drive it forward. That's what it does from start to finish. It never lets up whatsoever. It's endearing. It makes you cry. It makes you happy. It makes you laugh. It's almost a character itself, and that's a tribute to John Williams right there. But another thing too, just again to the realism, is just the animatronics. I think when this movie was first conceived, they were going to go with stop motion animation, which would have been a totally different movie. When you're looking at the raptor scene, when you're looking at the T-Rex scene, this was all going to be stop motion mixed with CGI. And it wasn't until they got a hold of Stan Winston. And Stan Winston is just a legend when it comes to creature features and making sick designs when it comes to Alien, when it comes to different horror movies as well too. So seeing his vision on this and making animatronics, like seeing that Triceratops for the first time, that's where I could be captivated with the CG Brontosaurus, but it wasn't until that Triceratops where you see Alan listening to how it breathes. That right there gets me emotional because that's like seeing your pet for the first time and just cuddling with your pet. It's like he's literally cuddling with a dinosaur. Even though my man's having like an asthma attack, he's just there.
But she was pregnant, right? That's what the issue was. Like, she was pregnant, right?
It wasn't pregnant. It was.
It was pregnant, wasn't it? Because I believed it was pregnant because I was putting all the pieces together, right? Like, why else would she be, you know, like winded like that? Or
you know, you're right, it is pregnancy because she's looking through the shit and she's like, it's West Indian lilac. It's like that. Just that scene alone, it's just, if that doesn't make you believe that this is real, I don't know what else does. The velociraptor scene too,
it kind of brings that I don't want to say humanity, but you know, that natural element that these were in fact animals, right? Mm-hmm. You know, just because, you know, dinosaurs are much bigger and much scarier than anything that we know now, right? Doesn't mean that it doesn't have that, that lifeblood in it, right? That it's not a creature, a living, breathing creature that has emotions, feelings, right. Thoughts, right? And that's what that scene does. It makes you sympathize with them too. It's like, yeah, these, you know, I just want to scratch its little ear, give it little scritches, you know.
Yeah, who wouldn't? I wouldn't, you know. And there's so much drama because every movie has drama when it comes to these films. Jaws did at one point, the animatronics, and so did this movie with the Tyrannosaurus Rex. For the scale of that monster, of that robotic monster, and how lifelike it was when they made this freaking behemoth, they didn't initially they did not want to film that scene in rain because they knew they couldn't wet that titan of a freaking T-Rex because it was right. As big as it was in the movie. It was that huge, especially the animatronic. And when they did start doing it in the movie set for Universal Studios, and the rain, the fake rain, the water was going into the animatronic, basically what happened was it was malfunctioning. Just like in Jaws, this monster over here was having a hard time. Like, the eye would roll back. It would start, like, chomping on things randomly. It would start getting convulsions. It was pretty scary. Like, I can imagine being, like, a set designer right there and then just looking up and it's like, ah! Stuff like that. But, you know, they got it together and that scene, I think that probably, if we're looking at the most iconic scenes of that movie, I think that T-Rex scene still holds up till today. I think from the water, which, fun fact about that water scene, they were trying to get that ripple effect so hard, they did not know how to do it. So what the I believe, I forget who he is, but what the creator of that scene did basically was he got a guitar string and went underneath where that car was and started plucking the guitar strings. That way you could get that ripple effect because nothing would work. But I love that little scene. I love the footprint when you first see the T-Rex. I love the goat scene. I love everything about that, from the kids almost dying to the T-Rex just flexing as many times as it can. I love it.
My man's on the toilet. Really trying to get away.
Deserves to die. I don't care.
Yeah, it, you know, a movie that had a budget of $63 million, which at that time, Jesus Christ, $63 million, right? Ended up grossing $1.046 billion. Would you say that that was well deserved?
Yeah, of course. I know you say that there were some flaws in the movie, and I get there are like some things we can nitpick on it, but from start to finish, I don't think there's a bad part about this movie. I think everything is genuine from how the kids are acting in this movie. They're not overacting. You know?
Oh, yes, especially when it's breaking through the glass.
Yes.
Like, it is just, it is.
Oh, that was a real moment. That was actually a fuck up, too, when they left the end of the movie. That was when the T-Rex was malfunctioning and it went through the freaking car. And that's why these kids are in terror, because they're about to die. So you're getting real illicit reactions right there.
I wonder if the eyes really did go back to that.
Would you be terrified? Would you? Like, I would have nightmares. I would never freaking act again. Like, you know what? One and done.
You'd be there just, Frank.
which is why they probably showed up like that half a second in part two. They're like, ah, we're here, but we're not here. Fuck this. We're not doing this again. Yeah, from the budget in this movie to what it made to the merchandise sales. I mean, here in Arizona, I've seen at least 3 Jurassic Park Jeeps or SUVs out here from the like replicas of the movie. This movie has left a mark in pop culture, in society, as a fantasy, horror, sci-fi, whatever you want to get from this movie, you're getting adventure classic, you're getting pristine characters, you're getting great writing, you're getting fun little tidbits. Hell, you're even getting strong female characters. You know, the chick's a hacker. She freaking got Jurassic Park back to where it needs to be within seconds.
And Laura Dern's character, right? I mean, she holds herself up throughout that entire movie, right?
She
and
does.
She's very intelligent, and what I love is like she kind of brought the facts to John Hammond, whereas Goldblum's character was just like pure like, no, you're dumb, you shouldn't be doing this. And you know, I love how she's like, you know, you have these plants in here that like, yeah, they look pretty, but you know, these are living creatures, and you know, you don't know how they're going to react to, you know, suddenly being awakened millions of years later, right? And what's their, you know, a lot of these are poisonous, you know, what's their first instinct going to be? It's going to be to protect itself. I love that, and that came from her character, and she just held herself up so beautifully throughout that entire movie. Like, this movie way ahead of its time. And which is a reason why, you know, as a gamer, once I found out that a game like Dino Crisis existed, I was like immediately hyped to play it, because I was like, oh my god, I get to live Jurassic Park, you know what I mean? It's like living it all over again, because that's just how cool this movie was and just the everlasting effect that it had. And here we are with, you know, 5 movies later.
Yeah, you're right. This movie has held the test of time, honestly. And I know I gave you my favorite part with the T-Rex scene right there. I know the raptors are, that raptor scene, the kids is phenomenal as well, too. Gets a little kooky at times, but still fun. Is there a favorite part for you that you could think about right off the bat before we get into part 2?
It's the scene where they see the dinosaurs for the first time.
Okay.
That is just, again, beautifully acting, and like that, if we also had that same reaction when you really think about it, right? Because that entire time, they're hyping this up, like, yeah, you know, I have this amazing thing, and while they don't know it's dinosaurs, like, we did, right? Like, that's what we knew we were going to go see, right? And this entire time, we're waiting, like, where the fuck are the dinosaurs, right? Like, I saw it at the beginning of this movie, where are the dinosaurs? And as soon as we see it, we're like, he did it! the son of a bitch, he did it. You know, I am my little 3-year-old self. I'm like, the son of a bitch, he did it.
Well, with very successful movie that comes out, sometimes there has to be a sequel. And of course, 4 years later, 1997, we do get the sequel to Jurassic Park, Lost World, aptly known. And playing on words right there, still directed by Steven Spielberg, and a callback to the original stop-motion animation movie of Lost World. This sequel is also an adaptation from John Christian as well, too, in his book as well, too. I just botched that name right there, and I'll get back to it again. But Steven Spielberg, basically, I don't know if the passion was there for a sequel to this. He definitely could have... Michael Crichton, sorry about that. He could have definitely rode to the sunset and still had a successful movie and let it be. But, you know, I think the majority of people were very excited that The Lost World came out, especially when the trailers came out. I know myself, I was at glee when I heard that this was happening. When I heard about the setting as well, too, that they're going to be roaming free from cages, free from society as well, too, and just living on their own, and people are just going to be observing them, I was like, cool, that sounds cool, like a natural environment, Lost World, Jurassic Park, rock and roll. Do you have any memories of this movie coming out? I know 1997, you must have been like, what, 12, 11?
I actually do, but it's the most random-ass memory for this movie, because... I didn't see it in theaters. I think the original we did see in theaters, but this one we didn't, or at least I know for a fact that I did it. But my first introduction to it was, I didn't even see the whole movie. I think I caught like the middle of it because we had rented it from Blockbuster, which I had no idea. And so I'm like hearing just all this noise, right? And I'm like, what is going on? Like, what are they doing over there? So I go across the house, and we lived in a, you know, pretty rough neighborhood. So in our living room was like the one room that had the air conditioning, right? And we only turned it on at night, and you know, when we wanted to get comfortable and stuff, right? And so I go into the living room, and like all the doors are closed to keep the air in, right? And I go in, and I just get blasted by this cold air, and it is like pitch black in this fucking room, and all you see is like our, you know, the big screen TV that we used to have back in the day, right? So we had this big old huge screen TV, and that's at the point where like the dinosaurs are, where the T-Rex, right? So that's when this part's coming on, right? And like I walk up right when like the fucking T-Rex comes in and is just like, and so like I got scared shitless, because like they had that shit blasting too, right? So I like run and like jump into the couch where my brother was like kind of hiding under a blanket too. So we were just both hiding under this blanket, and I watched the rest of The Lost World from there. But yeah, that is the only memory that I have of this movie.
Okay. I know for some reason I held this movie so high, like so pristine for some reason. And, you know, of course, throughout the ages, you know, you tend to look at things a little differently, especially as an adult. But I still have a lot of love for this movie. I know critically it's not the best movie out of the franchise as well, too. I know some of the writing's a little wonky, some of the subplots a little wonky. Heck, even Ian Malcolm's character being the lead in this movie, totally different type of character what we see in this movie compared to the first one. You know, he doesn't have the chaotician, mathematician kind of persona. It's more of like, I'm a scared dad, I'm a scared boyfriend, I don't want to be here, which rightfully so, I get that PTSD drama and all that stuff happening from the first incident, I get. But just to have him so, I wouldn't say weak, but he is kind of weak in this movie.
Yeah, you know, and you're right. And you know what makes that even a little more disappointing too is that, you know, the daughter that he gave him, like, you know, the fact that they gave him a black daughter in this movie was, again, at this time, was very well ahead of its time, yeah. Right? And it was amazing to see that. And I remember really enjoying that, the fact that they wrote that being young at that time, like I knew just like how impactful that was. But the fact that they kind of scaled back his character with that, especially with her, like, yes, her story's a little, like, it could have been better, especially with the whole gymnastics thing.
It was a lot of forced plot.
But they could have done so much better with that.
I definitely think so, especially with the whole joke that Vince Vaughn kind of makes, like, do you see a resemblance? Kind of. I'm like, oh, like, do we need that? Like, a little shade right there? Like,
right.
Wasn't low-key.
No, that wasn't even low-key at all. But, again, just like the original, there was just the most interesting opening for this movie.
Right?
Like, oh, okay, we're just getting right into fuck this little girl.
Hi, I'm Samantha, and I'm on my yacht. And oh, go ahead, girly, you can play. Go play in the island where we've never been at. And, oh man, like, what do we get in this, right? Like, the little girl goes off onto the far side of the island. She sees some compies. She's like, oh, what are you, some kind of bird? Feeds it, like, some chicken or roast beef. These shits start, like, attacking her, rightfully so, because why? Why not, right?
Haven't you ever fed a, have you ever taken out a sandwich on the beach? And just like immediately tackled by those damn
seagulls.
Yes,
that's what they Same. Were. That's all they were. Seagulls with like scaly seagulls. That's all they were.
And it was like, again, at that time, even I was young enough to know, like, oh, this is dark. Like,
yeah. And then you get the epic scream from the mother, and of course, you sure they pan right. off to Ian Malcolm just yawning, which was it's another thing that you get like. Some handy jokes right there. You get to see Ian Malcolm being summoned by John Hammond. You get to see the kids again. Just be like, hey, we're here to see, you know, Grandpa, but they left. You get the subplot of Injun basically taking over the Hammond estate. And basically, they're the new big bads of Jurassic Park. They were mentioned, of course, in part one, but now they have full control of the company. And they're looking to harvest the dinosaurs from this island as well, too. Now we get the funny jokes of, you know, the witty banter between Hammond and Ian that, you know, he went from capitalist to humanitarian within a couple of years and how he wants to basically save these dinosaurs and make sure that they're, you know, national landmarks so they don't have to be, you know, executed or pillaged in any kind of way. I found that kind of funny. Was that a little too much of a reach of Hammond, this idealistic, capitalistic man now becomes humanitarian to save the dinosaurs?
I want to say no, only because that's not how I perceived it. Like, from the start, I felt like he was giving Malcolm false narratives.
Okay.
Just because, like, again, I think he knew what they were doing. I think he was trying to sabotage Injun. Like, that's how I always perceived what was happening in this movie. Was like, he knew what Injun was doing. He played stupid. And he used Malcolm to pretty much be that spotlight and to catch what they're doing and to put them on blast. I don't even really think that he had any really care for the dinosaurs, but more so, like, I'm not going out without swinging.
Okay.
That's how I perceived it.
And I could take that. That sounds pretty awesome. I like that take right there. This movie also has a fun little cast. Of course, Jeff Goldblum, Julianne Moore, man, coming out of Boogie Nights. I mean, like, I love, you know what? I think Julianne Moore is so underrated. I think her and Marissa Tomei are the same people when it comes to their acting choices, but I love Marissa Tomei as well too. But I love Julianne Moore. I think she very much is the heart of this movie. Like, she feels like she's the most natural. Like, she feels like she's happy where she's at. She knows the lore. She's a paleontologist slash, like, adventurer as well too. Very bare bones, buckle down. I'm gonna do it my way or the highway. I like that. Out of everyone, I feel like she's the most grounded character. It's a little wonky that she gets sent by herself to investigate all these dinosaurs without any kind of help. Yeah, but, like, hey, that's what happens.
But, you know what? To be fair, like, how do you know that they were really out there, right? Like, I'm pretty sure that, like, you know, because there was no real proof that these things really even existed, right? So why are we going to waste resources by sending out a whole team when there's nothing there, right? Let's just send one person, and the chances of this actually being real and there are dinosaurs are like, what, 1%? That's probably how they perceive that and why she was there alone to begin with.
Okay, all right. If we're going to take that into account, though, I'm going to say this. Her character, Sarah, I think she is gaslighting E. Malcolm from start to finish.
I think 100%.
She even says it. I sought you out because of this. She's basically dating this dude just because he got next to dinosaurs, and she essentially got what she wanted. She got in touch with John Hammond and got to the goddamn island herself.
Yes.
Was that love genuine then?
No.
That is not, right? It can't be genuine. She's using this guy for everything.
Right.
Vince Vaughn's character, photographer and, of course, expert sabotager, which you learn later on. He was like, yeah, Hammond hired me to sabotage things. All right.
All he did was open cages.
Like one or two, right? He was like, yeah, I'm the insurance policy. What's up? A little dry, but I think he does the job well in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, with his character, had he lived or died, I don't think I really would have cared, because he really didn't have that kind of an impact. I think his only saving grace was, again, when he opened up the cages and, you know, let them roam free. I was like, oh, hell yeah. Like, yes, go. Finally, we have something good happening here. But other than that, Vince Vaughn's character really didn't do, and like, after we left the park, after we left the island, he didn't really have much of a part afterwards,
no.
Did he?
No, not right. Really. I mean, it was kind of cut bare bones for this movie. It's like they shot two different movies. They got the site B portion of the movie, which is great. There's some fun stuff there. Seeing what's her name? Julianne Moore's character just go against the Stegosauruses, going to the raptor field, which is one of my favorite parts of that movie. Get out, Rugrats! I love that part. There's a lot of fun stuff there. But yeah, like, some of these characters are very inconsequential. You know, she's very, you know, hands-on when it comes to the baby T-Rex part, and we'll get into that. But there are some other characters that I really do like, and I feel like they didn't get their due. This character, Ronald Tembo, the big game hunter. Love him. He's only there for the hunt. He's not there for Injun. He's not there for collecting dinosaurs. He's just there for the game. And it's like he has a moral code to some extent.
No, because he's still hunting. Like, he's just a hunter piece of shit. That's all he is.
Yeah.
But you're right. Because, and I think that was even part of his thing. Like, he says, I'll do this for you, but I only want one thing in return.
Okay, and, all right, you're right. It's not moral. It's more it's not capitalistic.
Yeah,
it's not for the money.
Evil fucking human shit, right? He's just like the epitome of a fucking, you know, hunter. Like,
he did break a baby's leg and wait for the mom to come.
Yes. And then
I still love him though.
And then, while he didn't have too much of a part, but that one Russian dude, right?
Yes.
What is his name? Is it the Peter Stolmare?
Yeah, I think so.
Dieter Stark. He was a Stark.
He's the one that freaking gets eaten up by the compies toward the middle of the movie. Love it. The big bad, if you will, Peter Lundo, who's like Hammond's nephew, the one that you get to meet in the beginning of the movie as well, too, saying that he's in charge of Injun now. I mean, did he play like ultra evil, like Victor Von Doom type of character? Not really. He was very subtle, very smug, if you will. But I think it was, you know, spoiler for anybody who didn't see this movie, I think his death toward the end with the T-Rex, the baby, and the mother kind of go to town on him on the ship. I think it was warranted. I think you gained enough hate for the character that it was warranted. Like, no, don't.
Fucking movie. But, you know, let's talk about the movie. Mm-hmm. you know, while it's fun to poke fun of, right, I will give you this, because now that we're reminiscing on it and bringing up, you know, you're right, there were a lot of fresh new takes that they did for this movie that were, like, really cool. You know, firstly, this was a different island, right? That's why it was called The Lost World, right? So, just, you know, seeing, you know, the other compound just, like, also destroyed to shit, just let you know, this just absolutely had no chance. So I also thought that was cool, because, you know, you saw that, you know, they attempted to, you know, set up base here. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, nope, that just wasn't gonna happen. So that was really cool. And then, like you said, the scene inside the fields where the raptors are, like, chasing them, and, like, you can just see, like, all the movement in the field, like, that was clean. Like, that was really cool. That was fresh. The waterfall scene.
Yes, with the poor paleontologist. Oh, I felt bad for that guy too.
Oh, it was he was like that weird, like, cowboyish guy, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was their paleontologist that was kind of instructing Injun what to catch and what their names were and whatnot. Good guy, and his banter with Julianne Moore's character as well too, so Sarah, I thought they were pretty fun. I thought, you know, like I said, a lot of characters, they had promise, very inconsequential. My man, oh, it's a high. You got high. His death, very sad as well too.
That's right, because all he tried to do was help them.
Yeah, if anything, that's what we're going to talk about right here. Probably going to talk about two parts right now. It really is that trailer scene that makes the movie, because unfortunately, I think there's a tone issue with this movie. They're trying to be very much open world adventure. At the same time, they want to keep that horror aspect or that sci-fi aspect from the first original Jurassic Park. And I feel like when they do these fun moments like the trailer scene, it really hits home, because that's what you came in to see. You came in to see destruction. And god damn, do I love that trailer scene with not just one but two T-Rexes trying to get their kid, essentially, who has a broken leg, crying, and they just destroy this trailer.
Yeah, that was again, it was one of those fresh takes, right, that we got. And, you know, the consequence of, you know, them hanging off, you know, the edge of the cliff, you know, hanging on for their dear life. And, you know, when they're going to get saved, right, you know, the time's clicking, especially when he starts hearing them, right, and you start feeling that rattle of them coming. It was just, and then also that high up view that they have with his daughter up there, and, you know, she's seen them coming back, right? Like, it's just, again, like, those were really smart choices made. And that was probably, like you said, probably the strongest scenes of this film. And had that not been in there,
it would have been a dull movie.
It would have been a very, very dull movie. Because, like you said, I think this movie relied more on unnecessary humor than anything.
Very much so. You get the unnecessary humor, but that scene alone, I think it works so well, because not just with the dinosaur interaction, because once they leave, you're still having that tension moment. Of them trying to get out the trailer and the glass breaking, the phone falling, Vince Vaughn, hang on to something, and stuff like that. Very strong. Like, that performance from everyone is so great.
Absolutely. No, you're right. You're right. But again, had it not been for that scene, and honestly, to this day, like, once I go back to, what was it? Was it Los Angeles?
It's San Diego.
San Diego. Once I get to San Diego, like, I pretty much check out at that point of the movie.
Okay, I was going to ask you that. Does that movie fall apart once I get to San Diego?
Yes, because, and again, this might be one of those callbacks that Steven Spielberg did, you know, to kind of honor King Kong, right? Because it's exactly like, it's almost the same thing, right? You have this giant beast, you know, in the new urban jungle, right? And, you know, how's it going to react? It's drinking pool water, and it devoured a poor little dog that was just trying to.
I love that scene. I don't know why. That scene holds up to me.
When the little kid's like, there's something outside my window.
I don't know why. That holds up. What doesn't hold up, unfortunately, is the bad Godzilla reference with the Japanese people running away from the dinosaur. I'm like, It's back and forth because as a Godzilla fan, I love it. But like, is it culturally appropriate? Probably not. But like, it's funny. But like, I look at it in 2022 lenses, I'm like, it's kind of fucked up, Steven.
Just because you added a black character, the only black character in this film, and give her a big role, that doesn't give you the means to...
But I don't know, I'm 50-50 on it, because as much as I love the island part, I do like seeing the dinosaurs interact with people for the first time, especially the T-Rex. I do like to see just everything from that, from walking down the street and little things of that nature. I do think it gets a little ham and egg when they start going for the chase, hearing the baby cry and the freaking Cadillac as it's storming down the streets. Like, yeah, I get that. But there is something special about this movie. And I think it only is because you get the John Williams score again and you get Steven Spielberg at the helm. And I think even at his worst, Steven Spielberg still can deliver something very captivating. He can still deliver good performances. He can still tell a great story without being too cheesy. But you are right. This movie kind of fails. And critically, it did fail because of the fact that it just didn't capture the same essence as the original. And of course, that's a huge, huge undertaking to do, to try to be as successful as the original. Not many sequels can do that in the first place. So with all the craziness happening in that movie, it didn't make as much money as it should have. It tried to get an Academy Award as well too, losing to Titanic for best visual effects. We roll back to Titanic from our original conversation right there. So there you go. Do you have any last bit of memories from this movie or anything you want to touch on before we get to this main event over here?
To be honest, no, because this is honestly, it's like I will willingly skip over this movie just because it just didn't do it for me, man.
Well, if that movie didn't do it for you, Jurassic Park 3 came out in 2001, and boy oh boy, if you were hesitant on Lost World, if you were like, you know what, I might be known Jurassic Park movies, let's take a movie, let's take everything you loved about both movies, let's add in more comedy, random characters, or random ass plot to begin with. But I will say though, the best part about this movie are the new dinosaurs, from the use of the pterodactyls to the Spinosaurus to random encounters with other new dinosaurs. I can appreciate the variety of new animals that we get in this movie, but god damn, does this movie, I try my best to hold it up to some kind of standard, but no, this is the lowest part of the Jurassic Park franchise altogether.
I'm so sorry that you feel that way, because I feel the complete opposite.
Oh, you love this shit!
I absolutely adore this movie. Like, I love this movie. I think this one did so much better than Lost World. However, what I will say is, hearing how you talked about the Lost World, right? I think that's why we even got Jurassic Park 3 to begin with, because it do so well, because it didn't have that same magic that people were wanting. So I think that's why they did Jurassic Park 3, because when you really think about it, it really is almost the first one, just with a hell of a lot campier story. But in my personal view, it worked out. Why did it work out? Because again, you know, now that we've proven, you know, within the last couple of years, that these dinosaurs do exist, and yes, we found that out because we saw one of them here in San Diego, there would be a natural curiosity for humans to want to go there and see that.
To hang glide there. Hey, man, it's your birthday. Let's go.
But that's why he paid those people to do that, because those people, like, they're one of those pirates that do that. It's just like Snake Island. Nobody is allowed to get near Snake Island, but people will be paid to take people there to begin with. And that's exactly what happened here. And again, what I don't understand is, like, what the fuck happened to that boat? Especially when there was, like, that was, like, the one thing that I just didn't understand, especially when we were never introduced to any kind of water monstrosity.
We weren't.
Unless that's what that motherfucker in Jurassic World is supposed to be.
No. I refuse to believe that because
oh, you're
there's
right.
blood
Me too.
In the inside of the fucking boat. I'm like, but there's no dinosaur. I'm like, what the fuck happened throughout this whole time? There were people there 5 seconds ago. And like,
where did
no,
this
Dad,
fog come from?
What's going
Why
on?
Is it foggy? Did Storm like just suddenly drop by? Like, what is she doing here? Right? That was the only thing that like really did it for me was just like, because we never know. We never find out. We just never find out what the
They just move on. One thing about this movie, I will give it, it's a fast movie. It just goes. It doesn't have time for plot. It doesn't have time to hold your hand. It says, you already know what you're in for. We're going forward. From the cast itself, you know, you're bringing back Sam Neill. I guess in their mind, they're like, you know, we need to go back to Isla Nublar because that's what they do. They go back to the old site again. They go back to Isla Nublar. They bring back Sam Neill for some fucking reason, for money reasons. He's like, yeah, I guess I'm not doing that great as a paleontologist. But Billy over here, because Billy doesn't know what the fuck he's doing half the time. But all right, Billy, let's go.
William H. Macy. Like,
bro! We get Macy over here. We get freaking Frank over here for no goddamn reason. Frank Gallagher is just like, yeah, our son crashed in the parasailing accident on this random ass island. Can you help us? Well, that's not what they told. They told him, like, we're fans of this island. We want to be there. We want to see as close as possible. They cahoot him into trying to get into this, and they want to pay him an exuberant amount of money, which they never do as well, which is sad. Billy dies for no goddamn reason. Spoiler alert. Billy dies for no goddamn reason. In the most horrific way possible, too. We have this guy. From
when
Elmo's
does Billy
World.
Die?
Billy dies!
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does! Or does he come back at the end?
Yeah, he does come back at the end.
Who doesn't come back?
The only people...
Did they roll him out or something?
Yeah, no, he never died. No, he never died.
Google this up right now. Does Billy
die? No, he didn't die.
Because I remember those teeth, the pterodactyls, those pteranodons, were fucking jabbing the shit out of him, drowning him in the water.
Yeah, no, he survived. The only people that died were the random, like, hitmen that they hired to take him to the fucking island.
You are correct, sir. I will stand corrected right there. He was believed to be dead after the Pteranodon attacks, but was later discovered to be alive just barely.
What I love...
Fuck this guy.
What I love about this movie, too, it's like, this was at the age when I was, like, looking at Billy and thinking, like, oh, this guy's fucking hot.
I knew you would have a crush on Billy. He Me screams too. Like, I am Adonis for no reason. I am a Greek. I'm Apollo.
He's every, you know, good-looking white boy that's on every gay advertisement for anything. Like, he is just the poster white gay, poster child white gay. But, what I do... It's, again, I love this movie, but you're right. Like, the cast of characters in here are, like, really kooky. Like, especially when...
Tia Leone? She is fucking annoying as hell in this movie.
Yeah, no, she was a little... Isn't she the mom from Liar Liar?
Yes.
Fletcher. Audrey. Again, it is kooky, it's very wild, but I don't hate the plot. I think the plot, again, it worked out, right? Because there's just so much happening, like you said. Even if it's not the action, it's just like the tension amongst the characters, right? Because, you know, these are divorced parents. Like, they don't talk to each other. The only reason why they're there in each other's presence is to save their son, who went off with, what was the fucking stepdad's name? Jerry.
Fucking Jerry.
The wonderful Jerry, right? And I love that. And I loved how they schemed Alan Grant to go there, right? Because they're right. And it's like, how else are we going to find our son? Which the fact that they really believed in their heart of hearts, and where the hell... he had to have, like, gotten some kind of loan shark money, bro, because there's no way you could have done that with, what is he, like, a handyman, right? He turned out to be a handyman, spoiler alert. He does cabinets and tile. He made them believe that he was a fucking millionaire, but...
You know who that is?
Who?
He is the clown villain in Air Bud.
Oh, you're right.
Yes, yes. I think he's also in Elmo's world as well, too. This guy over here, oh, Air Bud Clown, is your mercenary. No! No, 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 no. Everything about this just failed to me from the moment I saw the blood on the boat. But what are we gonna do? I don't know. To little fucking Billy over here stealing freaking raptor eggs. To Alan Grant playing with fucking vocal cords trying to hear what a raptor sounds like. Woo! No! Stop it, Alan Grant! Stop your bullshit! To him dreaming, and of course the best, most iconic scene in this movie, Alan. The dream raptor waking him up. Alan, I got feathers on my head now. Alan. No. No. No.
Yes. Everything about this. Remember when they're when we first get the introduction to the new dinosaur and they're trying to fly away and that guy's just like,
no, you're dead. Please move. Please stop. No, hey. You died. You died. He was probably the hardest person there. He was probably the most macho man there next to Alan Grant. My man had machine guns. My man was spraying dinosaurs. My man was Rambo. And Rambo got humbled really quickly. Like, oh my God. And then, what's this kid's name? The main kid. He's in everything these days. Oh, yes. Eric. This resourceful kid who got to live on fucking Isla Nublar for like 3 weeks eating canned beans. Yes, Eric.
Canned beans and dinosaur piss.
Fuck this kid so much. Fuck this kid so much. Right. Like, we need to get an excuse of how he's so resourceful. We didn't like, yeah, I went to like military school. Or yeah, I was in the Boy Scouts. No, you're just like, I got dropped here. And you're like, I guess I need to survive.
No, he read Alan Grant's books. That's how he knew.
You're a fan! Because that worked out the best way for the first kid for the first goddamn movie. Uber fan over here. 1, 2, zap. No. Kids. Kids in Jurassic Park. I'm tired of these fucking kids.
But I loved it. I thought, and you're right. I mean, this one tried to be as funny too, but I thought it worked better than Jurassic World, especially when he like really tried to pay with quarters in the fucking vending machine, and then Billy's just like, yeah, Falcon Punch.
But okay, all right, maybe on some levels, no, I can't forgive this guy. I'm trying my best right now because we get the dumbass scene of the cell phone being swallowed by a Spinosaurus, and every time he comes up, you gotta hear a ringtone. Beep, 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 beep. I'm like, why are we doing this?
That was iconic. That is like just as iconic as the fucking theme song. Like it really was. That was like John Williams like extension. Like I love that because it's the most annoying sound, but it worked.
I will say this. The dinosaurs were fun in this movie. I love the Spinosaurus. I love that part where you get to see him and the T-Rex kind of challenge each other and it just dominates the T-Rex with like one fucking bite. I love that airplane scene where the airplane's like broken up, the jet's like broken up and they're all falling into like the Spinosaurus' mouth. There's some good parts. The Pteranodon, the pterodactyl cage. I love that part
It was a little awkward, like, the way that they introduced it when he's just, like, casually just, like, walking up, like, hey, guys. that was a little
coming
sketch.
On the bridge, like, what's up? What are y'all doing in these neck of the woods?
This ain't your neighborhood, cuz.
This is Compton, bro. Pull a gun on you, Billy. I'm gonna show you what a Billy is. Get the fuck out of here, Billy.
Then he takes off with them, and fucking Alan's like, Billy!
Pterodactyl's like, you're the motherfucker if you're stealing eggs, huh? Not in here! Not in here! And of course, random toward the end. We're just all over the place with this movie, but that's how this movie is. Fucking, they get surrounded by the fucking velociraptors, half of hair, half of scales. They don't care. They're just like, whatever. Give them back the eggs, and they run away. That's all they wanted!
You cannot say that shit, but then enjoy Dominion when it's like, I'll save your baby. Like, no, that is the exact
I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it yet. Blue has a connection with Owen so far, so I don't know what the fuck's going there. But there was no connection. All my man did was Alan Grant trying to get the vocal cords out.
Connection, like, no!
Here, it's guys, I'm going to sound just like you with this trachea that I'm blowing into. Oh, he must be one of us.
No. Everything that happened in Jurassic Park 3 with the fucking raptors and this little, you know, like everything that happened is what inspired fucking Star-Lord's fucking relationship with this goddamn raptor. It's the exact same fucking thing.
Oh, and the random Lord Dern part, Lord Dern calls the military to come rescue them. Like, it's that easy. Like, oh, hi! Oh, hi, FBI! Oh, hi, Army! Oh, hi, Marines! Guess what? My ex-lover and Billy, they're in the fucking Isla Nublar. Do you know about that? Go rescue them. Because, you know, it's that fucking simple.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Because she's got... No, because she's got... You know, she's got contacts, but I love...
Contacts?
I love how they were... I love how they were... I love how they were in danger just a little bit longer because he had to watch Barney. Like, that was a good...
The kid's like, rah, rah, rah! Over here, Al's like, oh, oh. The dinosaur man is dying. Oh. Get mommy! Oh. Samuel, I love Samuel, but I don't know. That movie, he was doing his best to keep it together. This movie made money, though. Budget of $93 million. It made $368.8 million. So it made its money.
It did. And it was by far better than Lost World, in my opinion. Because, again, I think... And this is where, like... This, just like how you like all your weird, campy, like, horror shit.
Yeah.
This... that movie for me, because it is campy, it's really fucking weird, it's kooky, like the characters are just like all over the place. It's like there was far less direction in this movie than there was in Lost World. Just like,
that means something, because Spielberg didn't direct this. This is directed by Joe Johnson, a couple other people as well too, and the writing helm. This movie does not follow the books whatsoever. A couple of characters from the books, like of course Alan Grant and whatnot, but I mean, there are some good takeaways. There are some fun moments. And was a good end cap? Because we wouldn't see a movie for at least a decade revolving Jurassic Park. They would come out and do the 3D releases for both Jurassic Park and Lost World. Box sets would be made. You know, Parks and Universal Studios from California to Orlando. So at the end of the day, Jurassic Park as an IP was still around. But this movie right here was... I wouldn't say it was a nail in the coffin, but it did slow down them wanting to make another movie regarding the Jurassic Park franchise.
Right, and for those of you who just kind of want to step back, but like for those of you who don't know like who Joe Johnston does, like he directed the first Captain America movie, he directed Raiders of the Lost Ark, October Sky, like so he's done some really fantastic movies. Like he knows his direction, but I think he also knew what he was getting into with this one, so it was probably, you know, to get a little bit of fun. And honestly, I think, as you said, I think this was a good stopping point for the movie, especially like as ridiculous as it was. Again, I enjoyed it, and I think a whole lot of other people enjoyed it. It, to me, it's a lot more quotable than Lost World, because there's just, it's just that weird. It really is. And but again, I think it's a cool callback to, you know, I think it's almost like revisiting the first movie all over again, because I love how everything's deteriorated even more. I love how like everything here is like basically like it's really started a life on its own. And I think it's what Lost World should have been, as far as like, you know, the free, the open world madness, right? Because it seemed a lot more threatening as far as the island goes. It seemed a lot more threatening than Jurassic World. And I think that's another reason why I loved it so much, because there was a lot more consequence to this here. The consequence from Lost World was the people there that were causing all the chaos, because, you know, they were trying to hunt shit and, you know, breaking baby dinosaur legs over here. It's like, nah, cuz you and our, you know, you and our neck of the woods now, fucking creepy ass pterodactyl just walking across the bridge. Yeah, you know, and their little bird cage, like the fact that it was even shaped like a bird cage, like
Let me ask you this. Even with hindsight 2020, and we know what happens with Jurassic World, at least with two movies going into it, take that out of the equation, would there have been something that you would have changed out of the first trilogy? Would there have been like a moment or a movie or a direction that you would try to pivot to, or maybe even a different direction that you yourself would like to see?
Honestly, I would have liked a darker, gorier version of it.
Okay.
And that's very strange for me, because I'm not like really into the gore. Not because like I think it's gross or like I have a weak stomach. It's just because like a lot of times it's just fucking ridiculous. But you know, when you really think about it too, like every single one of these movies are kid family friendly movies. They really are. They are family flicks. You know, even with a little bit of horror, a little bit of blood every now and then, random blood on the boat for no reason, they're still family-friendly movies, and they're intended for, you know, the family to sit down and enjoy. But after the first movie, I think I would have turned it up a notch, right? To, like, maybe kind of have that concept of the Lost World, right? Where, you know, you send in a bunch of these scientists, a bunch of, you know, journalists to see what's happening at the park now, but it's more of like a Dino Crisis vibe, right? Where like shit has really hit the fan. So it's got that desolation that Jurassic Park 3 has, right? That I really love, just that decay of the of all the, you know, human-made buildings, right? Everything's just gone to shit. The dinosaurs are completely taken over. So, you know, turn up the gore, turn up the notch, turn up the ferocity and really the threat of being there on that island as these people are just trying to kind of document and, you know, kind of give that, like, National Geographic, you know, discovery of what's going on in this island. But now, you know, shit's hit the fan and now they just got to survive. So that's what I would have done, is just given it a more darker, threatening vibe and turned it into more of a horror survival movie.
I like it. I definitely feel like that would have been a new tone for the movie if you would have went a little bit darker, a little bit more edgier as well too. And, you know, I'm not sure if they can ever do that as well too, knowing that the IP of Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, is, like you said, very universal, fan-friendly. Family friendly as well too. Like, there are dark stuff, and, you know, sometimes you will see, you know, someone get eaten by a dinosaur, but I think kids today have seen worse things in real life rather than dinosaurs these days. I guess what I'm looking at here too is, now that we know that Jurassic Park the franchise will be coming to an end with Dominion, do you feel, this is probably my last question toward everything, do you feel that there is a spot in the world for a new franchise dinosaur, I guess a dinosaur franchise, or maybe even a dinosaur film?
Personally, I'm gonna say no, because it's really unless they go with what you really want, Frank, which was the
Dino Riders.
Unless they do something like that. I mean, dinosaurs have their presence, and they've had their presence, right? I mean, you have, you know, the Disney movie Dinosaur, right? Which, honestly, was I love that fucking movie, right? But then you have The Good Dinosaur, and then you have, you know, Transformers, right? They even did their little dinosaur take, right? You know, so, like, dinosaurs are, they have a cult following. Dinosaurs have their cult following. Pop culture, and I think it's always going to be there. But again, unless they do something like Dino Riders, I don't think that there's going to be something as fresh again, unless something like a Dino Crisis, you know, on film becomes a reality. And again, I think given like a darker tone and a more edgier thing, it might actually strike a new nerve with people because, again, it's giving us everything that we want, but never really seen unless it's like some random fan-made sci-fi movie that airs on like Saturday at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, I think you're right. I agree with you on that side. I think unless they go over the top, but then over the top goes into the sci-fi movies like Velocipaster and things of that nature. You know, which is an excellent
I forgot about Velocipaster.
excellent movie, but for all the wrong reasons. I think unjustifiably, but also justifiably. So any big budget dinosaur movie will always have its comparison to Jurassic Park. They're going to use that as a barometer to measure what a dinosaur movie is. And I think that's a little unfair in some ways, but at the same time, how could it not be because of the presence in pop culture that Jurassic Park gives?
A very easy argument to that is like, look at dragons, right? Look at how dragons have been perceived. But when you really think about it, is there a one like root movie or TV show that you will say, oh, this dragon is always going to be like, you can't top this, right? You can't, because dragons have been portrayed in very, very numerous ways in very different forms of media. And they've either done very well or some of them just done very poorly, but none of them are ever really compared to another thing. So to me, that would be my argument, because it's the exact same thing.
Maybe, but I also feel like with dinosaurs, there is a sense of realism to it. Like, these creatures did exist at one point in time. So unless you are putting more fantasy into dinosaurs, unless you're diving into the fantasy world, if you are still bringing up dinosaurs in any kind of capacity, like whether it's a Discovery Channel feature, you're gonna get that comparison. Whereas dragons, there's so many different takes that, like you said, you can't really pinpoint. You have Tolkien, you have D&D, you have, you know, recent things like, you know,
Game of Thrones.
Even before that, going into, which is a great film, Reign of Fire, one of my favorite movies. There's so many depictions of what dragons are, and the presence of dragons, even in pop culture. You're going from different cultures, from like Japan and how they categorize dragons, and China as well too, going into Europe as more of a serpents and krakens, and then going more into America or Europe with the Middle Ages, and in America now with the big winged dragons from the Tolkien side of things. Like, there's so many depictions, whereas dinosaurs, you kind of get, if you put all the bones together, you kind of get what you get. You ass right. and feathers, that's about it now.
Right, ass and feather.
But I would be interested to see, and we'll definitely circle back to this with the next three films for Jurassic World, and we'll give our takes on those as well too. But I would be very interested to see in the next 5 years if someone has the balls to tackle a dinosaur movie again.
And that might be the reason why they haven't, is because you know you're going to get compared to none of the other Jurassic Park movies except for the first one.
Yeah.
That is the only one that you're ever going to be compared to, because everybody knows, like, because even these will always be compared to the original OG, and this one will always be at the top. Do I think that there's ever going to be a movie that's going to top this one? No.
Nah.
No, because they missed their chance. They missed their opportunity. Steven Spielberg went for it, and he went for it hard, and he set the bar, impossibly high. And I truly, 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 truly believe that. But I'm glad he did it, because, again, it's one of the greatest movies of all time. As you can see, as we can agree to disagree and like have discussions about, you know, the sequels, they make for a good conversation, and this is, you know, the whole point of these things, right? The whole point is to grab a cup of coffee, grab a drink, talk about it, and talk shit about it. And
and not just once, too. Spielberg did this with Jaws, and I can argue, too, that the only movie that, in my opinion, you could probably pull up a couple ones out of your hat, but for me, I think the only movie that probably rivals Jaws, at least the first one, maybe Deep Blue Sea. And maybe that's because of all the wrong reasons as well, too, because that's a funny-ass movie. But I don't see any other movie that comes close to a shark movie than Jaws.
Oh, we gotta do an episode on Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, you want the big shark movie franchise? We could do Deep Blue Sea. We could do Meg.
You killed my bird.
You leave Deep Blue Sea alone. That is such a treasure for no apparent reason.
That is a great movie. That is a great fucking movie. Let us know what you think, y'all. Like, I want to know what the world thinks about. And you know what? You know what? Not to kind of extend everything here, but what I've learned is, yes, we have our original trilogy, right? And while we can always debate about, you know, how good these are, but the fact of the matter is that this generation has their new trilogy, right? This is the generation, this is the trilogy that they are growing up watching, right? We're buying them the toys for this new series, for this new trilogy here, right? When you're buying a toy, I mean, it might have the original Jurassic Park, you know, logo and licensing, but you'll most of the time you're gonna see it's gonna say Dominion, or if it's gonna say Jurassic World, right? Mm-hmm. And you gotta appreciate that, right? Instead of, you know, it's cool to bond and show like what we grew up with, but I'd say don't take away, you know, how, you know, these kids feel about the, you know, this new trilogy, because again, they're in the situation that we were when these came out, and I think that that's really cool that they can grow up with their own version of it, right?
Yeah. I agree 100%. Hey, when we get into our next trilogy later on this month, we can deep dive, because I have some great personal feelings about Jurassic World. I absolutely love that movie. The second movie to come after that, not so much, and we'll see what happens with Dominion, but I think they both have a fun contrast of what the original trilogy is as well too. I think they kind of run parallel, where the first movie sets the tone, whereas the second movie kind of goes off rails, and we're gonna see what happens with this third one. This might be your Jurassic Park 3, Jake. Okay, this might be everything. You might even get the Kirby's back. Okay,
bro, if I get the Kirby's back, I'll be so happy. Oh my god,
you might even get Billy back randomly. Like, what's up, guys? I got all the eggs. Blowing the fucking trachea. Goof a helicopter to giant beard. Billy! Anyway, guys, that's a wrap for this right here. Hopefully everyone did enjoy this right now. It's been a pleasure as always, and I can't wait to do the next one with you, man. And if you guys want to look us up, PCF Podcasts on Twitter, PCF Podcasts on Instagram, Pop Culture Fanatics is on all podcast platforms. And yeah, we want to hear from you, from Facebook to Instagram to Twitter. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to hear next as well too, going into July. I know we have Resident Evil coming up, and that alone is going to be a handful for us to deep dive into, but I know we're both very excited for that.
I mean,
listen,
we'll talk about it when we get there.
I will say
we'll
this.
We'll talk about it.
I'll close this statement with this right now. Close off with this. I think Welcome to Raccoon City was enjoyable. I'll say just, I'm not sorry about it. I'm not sorry about it whatsoever. I had a great time watching that movie. We saw that shit together, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
I had a great time. Why? Because I didn't get Mila Jovovich. I didn't get her husband directing shit. I just got a weird movie about Leon doing nothing and everyone else doing all the work, and I'm okay with that.
We got a Journey music video.
Anyway, guys, that's it for us. Jake, I appreciate you, man.
Always have a good night, pugs, and remember, enjoy pop culture.
Later, man.